trình phát thanh dành cho đồng bào Việt Nam ở xa tổ quốc. Chương trình phát thanh cho đồng bào Việt Nam. Chương trình dành cho đồng bào Việt Nam ở xa.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Xin Chào Homie podcast. I'm your host, Nhiên Mai. We have a very special episode for you this week. It's a very special episode. It's our first team up episode with a fellow podcast. So let's introduce our panel for this week. First we have originally from Canada. She moved to Saigon after quitting her job as a line cook to become a stand-up comedian. In 2018, she recently won the Saigon Heat of the Vietnam Comedy Competition. Please welcome Anh Phan. Next, we have pseudo-American and an emerging talent on the local Saigon comedy scene. He's known for his experimental brand of clean, fun comedy, fun for the whole family. Please welcome Jack Nguyen. And last but not least, we have our special guest. He's originally from Scotland. He's also the host of the 7 Million Bites podcast and also one of the major leading force in the Saigon comedy scene. Please welcome Nayo Mackay, everyone.
Thank you.
Oh no.
Nia.
It's I can Nia see the look Mackay. On your face, Neil. I can see that look on your face. It's always said your name. I'm like, ugh. It's like it penetrates deep into the core.
I'm sorry, this is I know. It's very hypocritical of me. You know? Nayo Mackay. Yes,
thank you very much.
No worries. Glad to have you on. How are you guys doing? How's life?
It's that lockdown okay. Life, y'all.
Yes, I don't know how much do you know about the recent events in Saigon, but we've basically, as of today, entered the strictest lockdown we've had since last year. So basically, we've encouraged not to go outside unless for essential services. All dining has been banned, so it's takeaway only. All the parks have been closed. It's maybe not like in the UK or Ireland where you are forced to stay in your home, but you're heavily advised to stay at home if you can.
I think it's the same in Vietnam. It was the same in the UK and Ireland. You're heavily advised to stay local. I think things seem a bit serious right now.
But apart from that, it's all good. The sun was shining today. The AQI was like 13. It was clear blue skies, which we don't always have here in Saigon. So looking at the positives.
That's good. So we're just going to go straight into our main topic, which is obviously you, Neil, and your podcast.
an idiot's guide. That's awesome.
Yeah, an idiot's guide to Neil and 7 million bites, everyone.
Because it takes an idiot to know Neil.
Neil, can you just give it like a brief summary of your journey moving from Scotland to Vietnam?
It's a difficult one. A brief summary? How brief? You cut out a little bit as you asked that question. What was the, can you ask that full question again?
Sorry. Can you just give us like a brief, summary of like your journey, moving from Scotland to Vietnam? Like, where did you go? Where did you go in between that? And why Vietnam? Why did you choose Vietnam?
Of all places, right? I know. I left Scotland 18 years ago. I went to America, then Australia, then New Zealand. None of that was planned. It just kind of happened. And then came to Vietnam for a vacation with my wife to visit her sister who lived here with her husband. And we just fell in love with the place. I always remember we went back to New Zealand after our holiday. We traveled pretty much the whole length of Vietnam from the Mekong Delta all the way up to Sapa. And the first weekend we went back to Wellington in New Zealand, we just sought out Vietnamese food, which we didn't even realize was everywhere. We were drinking Vietnamese coffee. We even found one restaurant was selling ba ba ba, but we refused to buy it because it was about 50 times the cost that it is here in Vietnam, which is obviously like the cheapest beer here, which what probably be like 50 cents or something. And back in New Zealand, it was about $7 or $8. So we're like, no, we don't love Vietnam that much. But we did fall in love with Vietnam, and so we decided we were going to go traveling a year later through Southeast Asia. So we did Malaysia, we did Thailand, and then we got to Vietnam. We came just for a short time, and then we were going to keep on traveling. But as many expats will tell you, you kind of somehow just Vietnam draws you in. So we 6 weeks turned into 1 year, 1 year turned into two turned into four, and then now we're just about, actually this week is our fifth year anniversary in Vietnam. Actually, I think it might have passed it and I didn't even realize. Yeah, this week has been 5 years in Vietnam.
Wow, congratulations. Yeah, so definitely a lot of moving back and forth, right? It's just and you obviously haven't lived in Scotland since you moved abroad.
No, I left Scotland when I was 20 to just go for one summer to work on a summer camp in Rhode Island. And then one summer again turned into two, turned into five. Ended up living in America, applying for residency and whatnot, which wasn't successful just because it's difficult to get residency in America, which led to me then traveling to Australia, then led me to New Zealand and eventually Vietnam. So it's been a quick 5 years. This has probably been the fastest 5 years of my life. I still can't believe it's been that long.
Definitely. And and also the podcast, how did you come up with that?
Yeah, so it's interesting you ask. It's a good question because I'm just writing a blog post about it today, but I'll try and keep it as short as possible. The shortest answer is I was bored. So my wife and I went on different schedules and I had Sundays to myself, and most of my friends and my wife all worked on a Sunday, so I had nothing to do and I was kind of bored. And I'd always been a fan of podcasts, like from the very beginning, since way back in 2005 when Ricky Gervais started a podcast. And just one of those things, you know, I was like, oh, guess I could start a podcast. And my main inspiration was that I'd found that there were so many people here in Saigon that had a story to tell. And, you know, the example best of all was J.K. Hobson, who everyone here knows. And I'd started to get to know through him being a comedian, and then we kind of become friendly. And I knew that he'd been in a fairly well-known band called Crisis, like a thrash metal band. And I knew he had this interesting background. And so and there was lots of similar people like him in Saigon that I knew that had this interesting background that you wouldn't really know about it unless you scratched the surface or you got to know them. So that was part of the inspiration, was I wanted to get to know people's stories because I knew that people had more to them than maybe meets the eye. And so yeah, did that first episode with J.K. Hobson. I was saying to him last week, we had a small birthday party for 7 Million Bikes because it's been the 20th of May was 2 years since the first episode with J.K. So we had a small gathering because that's all we're allowed, just to celebrate. But that episode with JK, as people here will know, he likes to talk. And that episode ran about 3 hours long. It ran so long that my wife got locked out of the apartment. And when we eventually took a break, we opened the front door and my wife was outside the door waiting to be let in. Not best pleased, let's put it that way. But we took a short break and then we finished the recording. So I think we recorded for about three and a half hours. It ended up splitting the episode into two parts. But I knew that was why I wanted to interview JK, because I knew he was a fascinating character. I knew he had a lot to talk about. And so it's just a really interesting episode. And then that was the first one. And then we've just kind of kicked on from there.
Fantastic. So yeah, the things that, so one of the things that stand out is obviously is just the stories that you get from like people living in Saigon, you know, expats and Vietnamese alike. But so what are the things that make the podcast stand out? Like what are the gimmicks that you do with it?
I don't think there's any gimmicks. the thing that stands out the most that almost annoys me is that my friend Lewis, who's a music producer and now produces the podcast every episode, he made the theme tune for me, which we kind of just talked about. I think it was his idea of using some of the sounds of Vietnam and then putting a beat to it. And it was at the point where the podcast was actually ready to go out, and we just kind of talked about it generally, but he hadn't sent me anything. So I literally was already looking up royalty-free music that I could just use as an intro song, because nothing had happened. And just as I was getting ready to choose a song, he sent me a file and he said, how does this sound? And I listened to it, and if anyone goes and listens to it, it just blew me away immediately, and it's never changed since. There was no more editing to it. It's still the theme tune to this day, which is kind of, you know, the noise of Vietnam. So like, bap sao re, and the noise of motorbikes and whatnot, but he's put it over a beat. And so I probably still get more feedback from people telling me, I love the intro music, than anyone ever actually telling me how much they love the podcast, which, so it's a bittersweet feeling.
Oh yeah, that's great. But also because I was on your podcast a couple months ago, and in it you also asked you always ask the guest at the end of the podcast, you always ask the guest the same set of questions. Then what were those questions?
So they actually change every couple of seasons to keep it fresh. So the questions in the first season, couple of seasons, I can't remember off the top of my head now. It was like kind of like, not boring questions, but someone said to me like, oh, these are questions are a little bit obvious. So it was like, what's your three favorite Vietnamese foods and things like that. So the questions that I asked you were, what's your favorite sunset spot in Vietnam? I can't remember the rest of them. Hold on, let me quickly look. But they've changed for this season now. So this season I ask, so Nia, you probably haven't seen this. Anne and Jack, you can probably chime in on this. So the name of the podcast obviously comes from the amount of motorbikes in Saigon. But one of the things I've noticed recently with the increasing wealth in Saigon, there's more and more cars on the road. But at the same time, as the wealth increases and the cars are become more lavish, so to speak, the paint jobs become more disgusting. So, yeah, you know what I'm talking about? So, like, last week or last month...
I've seen a pink chrome car. It was so ugly, I had to take a picture.
Yeah.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. So, my inspiration was, there was a bedazzled Mercedes outside my building. And when I mean bedazzled, you can go on my Facebook and find the picture. This was a beautiful brand new Mercedes Benz. I've no idea how much it would cost. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the whole thing was covered in silver glitter. And I've seen several cars like that. So I'll put the question to the panel then. The question that I now ask everyone is, what is the craziest car that you've seen in Vietnam?
Oh my god,
that's a good question.
So many answers. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I've seen like a Sharpie yellow, like highlighter Sharpie yellow.
Like neon.
Car. Yeah, like neon.
Wow.
So
wow.
That is obviously very, it's very striking, and it's just weird. That's just a really tacky color to have your car in, you know what I'm saying?
I try not to use that word, but tacky is probably the best description of most of these cars.
Yeah.
Tasteless.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Honestly, I haven't seen anything crazy.
You don't live in Tau Dien, though, that's why.
That's true. I stay the fuck away from there. But I haven't seen like a particularly crazy car other than the pink chrome one that I mentioned outside my aunt's apartment building. It was in D2 actually. I go to D2 sometimes. That's when I saw the ugliest car I'd ever seen. But I've seen crazier motorbikes. I saw a motorbike once that was just decked out in animal prints. Like the seat was like leopard print. There was a wrap on the bike itself that's leopard print. Like everything was like there's zebra print. Everything was animal print, and it looked so awful, and it looked amazing at the same time. I wanted to steal it. It looked like it came out of a Nicki Minaj music video.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Sounds like Pimp My Ride. There should be like a Vietnam edition of Pimp My Ride.
That's a great idea.
There should be. That's...
Exhibit, if you're listening to this episode, you should come to Vietnam and do a reboot of Pimp My Ride.
I would totally have a pink chrome motorbike, but not a car. A car is too much. I just feel that. Like a motorbike, like maybe a Harley, a pink chrome Harley. That would work, I feel.
Mm. Rose gold Harley for all the white girls in town.
Maybe like hot pink, like metallic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Cool. Also, now other than being a podcaster, you also do stand up comedy and as well also like producing the shows in Saigon. So how did you fall in love with the stand up?
For me, it's just something that's always been part of my life because in Scotland, you know, we're lucky to have Billy Connolly, who is, not to overstate it, he's almost like a god in Scotland. And I'm from Glasgow, the same as Billy Connolly. He was a welder. My dad was a welder. He worked in the shipyards. My dad worked in the shipyards. He got famous in late 60s, early 70s. I'm born in the early 80s. So my whole life, I've just known Billy Connolly. Scotland has a wealth of famous, famous, funny, funny people. Even to this day, you know, Kevin Bridges is probably now the best example at the time, and he's one of the funniest. So stand-up comedy's always been a big part of my life. It's always something I've loved. And then I really fell in love with it when I went to New York for New York City. And I was in Manhattan, Times Square. You know, you get given a voucher or whatever. You get given a flyer for a comedy show. And we went to a comedy show on Times Square. And I just remember laughing nonstop. And, you know, I'm one of these people, I don't mind taking the piss out of myself. And so the first comedian did that thing where they went around the audience, where are you from, had a joke, where are you from, had a joke. And not being anywhere close to being a comedian, you just think that they're making this stuff up on the spot. Now you probably realize, like, oh yeah, they probably had all these jokes in their head ready for every country that they speak to, but it didn't seem like that. And so he got to me and obviously just took the piss out of me being Scottish. But it got, because I think because I enjoyed it so much and I was laughing so much, literally every comedian that came on just went straight to me and they were like, where's the Scottish guy? And then just unloaded on me. But I was laughing so much. So I always remember that as being a real big moment when I was like, this is just so funny. So I just always gone, since then, I just always gone to stand-up comedy. I'd always watched it, loved it. And eventually just wanted to do it,
Do you like being humiliated?
I don't know about that, but yeah, maybe. Not in the way you're thinking, Jack. I know how your mind works.
But yeah, and so when did you start doing stand-up comedy?
This August will be only three years. But, I mean, it was probably like, I don't know where exactly I get this number from, but it was like 7 years, I think, where I was wanting to do stand up, where I got so close sometimes when we lived in New Zealand. I remember we went to an open mic night and I had notes in my pocket. I used to go to sleep dreaming or like going over sets in my head about what I would say. And I just could never pluck up the courage to do it. And it wasn't, I did public speaking and things like that. I wasn't particularly shy, but the whole thing of doing stand-up comedy was just like a step too far and I could just never take that step. I got so close and then it wasn't until August 2018, went to the open mic night at Indica, which everyone here is very aware of, and I'm sure many listeners, if they're in Saigon or watchers in Saigon, will know of the Indica open mic night on a Monday. And just fortunately I went this night, again, with notes in my pocket. I hadn't committed to myself. I hadn't said, oh, I'm definitely doing it. I was still like, oh, I don't know. And then just fortunately that night, nobody showed up. I remember there was about four people in the audience. One other comedian showed up. Angie the Diva was hosting. And so she did a bit. Then the one comedian did his set. And then she came back up and she was like, well, guys, this is our show. She's like, does anyone here want to give it a try? And so just that was all I needed, because there was no one there. I was less embarrassed, not embarrassed, less scared, I guess, and she opened that up. So I was sheepishly put my hand up and got on stage, and then that was it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. And also, other than besides gigging, you're also producing. You're also a show producer, and you're producing several shows in Saigon, including the shows like The Bubble, the one at the Hard Rock Cafe, and also the headliner show.
Yeah.
So and I think some of them are features, some of our panelists as well, like Jack and Anne. So you guys could chime in about this. So how do you come up like with all those like producing those different shows?
Yeah, so I'd always organized events. So my kind of background, my career had been organizing events for charities and things like this. So I'd had a kind of background in running events, and even in Saigon, I had been running events for my previous job. And that was how you posted the picture this week. That was one of the ways, that's basically was my gateway drug into putting on comedy shows, was I did fundraising events to raise money for local charities. And then as I obviously became more exposed to the comedians and the comedy scene here, I decided to run a charity comedy night, which you were part of, Nia, along with NJ the Diva and JK and Kirk and Caleb and Wile and Vumin too. And if I'm forgetting anyone, I'm sorry. But so we did a comedy charity night. I didn't perform, I didn't host, I was just organizing it. And then as time went by, and then I started getting into comedy and doing more shows. Just like, and Jack and Anne will tell you as well, the biggest thing for comedians is just getting stage time. But at that point, I was just getting like no stage time. And for whatever reason, people weren't asking me to perform. And so eventually one of these things, I was like, well, I know how to organize shows. I know how to put on events. And I wanted to host as well, because I did have a background in public speaking and things like that. So I wasn't particularly shy about things like that. But again, I wasn't getting the opportunity to host shows, even though I was putting myself forward. So I was just like, well, let's do it myself. And I know how to do it. So I put on a show at the Hop Shop, which was the Where Are You From show. Remember when we used to have tourists in Saigon? That show was predominantly for tourists, because it was in the heart of the tourist area of D1. And the reason it was called Where Are You From is because tourists would come, and then part of the show was, oh, where are you from? Where are you from? And we'd all these people from all over the world and locals as well. And then so it was a lot of fun, but then that dried up. But anyway, and then from that one show, then another venue approached me. It became two, it became three, it became four. And now, so it's pretty regular. We're now doing shows in Da Nang and Hoi An, COVID allowing, as COVID keeps kind of stuffing things up. So we were meant to actually be in Da Nang and Hoi An like today doing shows, but those were cancelled weeks ago because of the latest situation.
Definitely. And also, Jack and Anne, like, have you guys seen the shows that Neil produced? And if so, like, what are some of the crazy stories you have seen?
Wait, did you say how did we get in one of the shows that Neil produced?
Like, yeah, no, it's like if you performed at one of those shows, what are some of the crazy story you got from it?
Crazy stories that I performed at Neil's shows.
Well, like, so that's just some of the thing is how what was it like doing them?
The first time I did a show for Neil, I remember it was one of those Where Are You From shows, right? I remember, because Neil reached out to me, and I think before that, I was doing the open mic at Lou Bar. It temporarily moved to Lou Bar for quite a while, and Neil came up to me and he asked me if I wanted to do a show, but like, you know, before that, he asked me to, like, you know, just come to one of his shows at Wham Bar first to, like, you know, get a feel of what it's like to do comedy there, like, you know, just to do comedy with him, basically. And yeah, it was really cool. And I went to Hop Shop for the first time I did that show. I remember it was really fun. I think it was one of the first comedy shows I've done as well. Like, yeah, I'm fairly sure, because before I wasn't, you know, I was a rookie. I wasn't really invited to a lot of comedy shows, But yeah, but I remember Neil and Angie being one of the first people to come up to me and be like, you know, hey, do you want to do it? So I was, obviously it was very ecstatic for me. I didn't even think that I would get to do it like semi-professionally, right, like this, because I always thought that I would just be that person who comes up to open mic every Monday and says whatever he wants to say and just go home. And I've been that person for months, and I didn't think that I'd be like, you know, good for anything that makes money-ish. So yeah, it was very nice that that Neil and Angie reached out to me, and apparently it's some sort of validation to think, you know, to know that you're apparently good enough for a show. So it's just like, that really helped with my mood back then too, because, you know, like, insert basic, I was bullied in high school plotline and I hated everybody. So yeah, that was the only thing going for me in senior year.
Sounds very inspirational. Neil, you saved a life there.
Yeah. Let's not be too dramatic.
No, imagine like a biopic with, you know, on a bio, yeah, if Jackie ever made his biopic, you know, that would be one scene.
I totally understand school shooters now, but like, but I'm just saying, I want to shoot everybody in my school, but comedy is the only thing that's stopping me from doing it. So thank you, stand up comedy. Thank you for people who believe in me.
That's great. And have you ever done any of, new shows?
Yeah, I did one for the first time a few weeks ago at Malt South. It was like semi-lockdown had already started, I think, so it was like limited capacity. What was the question again?
So Have you done any of the new shows, and what was it like?
Yeah, the one I just talked about.
And how was it?
Okay, here's the thing. We got, the performers get 3 free drinks, and Neil gave us our beer tickets, all 3 beer tickets, before we performed. And they're like double IPAs. It's like close to 10% alcohol, but it doesn't taste like it. And we get all 3 tickets before we perform, by the way. So I got drunk before I went on stage. Me and Eric both got drunk, and when we went on stage and performed, we were wasted.
I did not know this.
I hope so. I was wasted. I was like leaning up against the whatever behind me, and I was like, all right, guys, bestiality. Alright. I was definitely drunk, but I'm more confident when I'm drunk, so that was actually a good thing, but it's also pretty dangerous.
Mm. You couldn't tell. She absolutely killed it that night. I didn't realize you were drunk, but yeah, no, you were awesome.
Yeah, just make sure that you're drunk, you're not that, you're not too drunk, you know, I mean, it's fine being drunk on stage, but not too much.
Well, the one great, time I got too drunk and high at the same time before my performance at an open mic at Indigo, and it was a full room, and this is why it's dangerous. I went on stage, and I started talking, but I couldn't hear myself because there were people in the room talking really loud, and I just scanned the room quickly to see where the noise is coming from. There was a bunch of guys who just came in from the garden. They were at the bar ordering drinks, and I just kind of blurted out, "Hey, shut the fuck up." And then they turned and looked at me, and then everyone cheered, and then they shut the fuck up after that. And then I continued to talk about which animal I wanted to fuck, because that was very important.
That's good. Yeah, it sounds like, Neil, you have done a lot to like give people opportunities by producing these shows, you know, eventually becoming a major player in the Scion comedy scene. Also, going back to the podcast. So, what are some of your favorite episodes that you have done?
There's quite. I don't like to single any person out, but there's a few that are particularly good. The one I did with Tam Le, who created Saigonista, which is like a closed door restaurant That was particularly fun. We had a good time. Just this season, I did, I've just, the two episodes that have been released already with Ilsa Zorb was the goofiest episode I've ever done. I normally try and be, professional, I guess, and try and be a good host and an interviewer, but we, something just clicked between us and we were just super goofy the whole time, which came across in the episode. It wasn't, I don't think it was at the same standard of, that my other episodes were at, but I had a real good fun time. The episode with JK always stands out, as I said, even though it was the very first one. And the one with AJ Miller, I don't know if anyone's listened to it, who's a fellow performer. She's an artist. She's a personal trainer. She's amazing. One of the things with my podcast that I like the most is I basically do no prep, which is partly because I'm too busy to do any. Maybe a bit lazy. I don't think it's lazy. It's mostly I'm just too busy to actually do any prep. But I also really like just going in fresh and not, and being unscripted and not really knowing what we're going to talk about. And, you know, at the end of the day as well, you can edit out all the nonsense or anything that's not interesting. But with AJ, she came on. I had no inkling of what we were going to talk about. And almost immediately she just got talking about her father, who was in the military and on the American side and came to Vietnam and fought in the war here and ended up with, you know, leukemia and dying of Agent Orange and all of this. Really horrible. And she was on the podcast just literally in tears telling the story. So I'll never ever forget that. And I just remember the time wanting to cry, but also kind of like, okay, you are the interviewer, whether this is a small podcast in Vietnam or a massive interview, you need to be objective and you need to be strong and you need to be the interviewer. So it was one of the most difficult things ever, that was not to go over and give her a hug and cry. I just had to sit there and listen and let her speak and then be able to ask a question and continue talking. So that was the most emotional episode I've ever done. It was unexpected. She really bared her soul, and which was just really unbelievable and unexpected. And if anyone hasn't listened to it, I would definitely go back. It was not, anyone who knows AJ, she's such a character and she's so fun. And it was not what I was expecting, but it was a beautiful, beautiful episode.
Fantastic. Sounds fun. And also one of my personal favorite, from your podcast, excluding the one I did, the one you did with me. It was the one you did with Woman Too, which was apparently was one of your most successful episodes, yeah, in terms of listening numbers.
Second most successful episode.
Yeah. And so what was it like doing the episode in terms?
It was good. So obviously everyone knows Woman Too, and so you can feel free, okay, to cut this out or keep it in, depending on what you want to air and maybe what Woman 2 will be comfortable with. But so my memories,
you just could be brief about it. Yeah,
my memories from that episode was that I think it was about 10 or 11 in the morning, and I had a full liquor cabinet, and I just said, oh, would you like a drink? And she was like, yeah, okay. And so she had a very small vodka. Yeah, like 10 in the morning, 11 in the morning, just to lubricate, I guess. But I mean, yeah, so she wasn't getting wasted or anything like that, but I always remember that. And one of the funny things about this, so Woman 2 won't know this, but that was the most amount of work I've ever had to do to make an episode. And the reason was, I don't know what exactly why, but she stopped and started quite a lot. And I don't think she does this in real life, but there was lots of little gaps in between what she was saying. Mm-hmm. And so the episode seemed quite slow and quite long. Mm-hmm. So if you go back and listen to that episode, it sounds like quite a flowing conversation. That took the most amount of work ever, to just keep cutting tiny little bits and speed up the episode to make it flow a bit better. So the content was amazing. It was just, I remember the kind of editing program was just full of about 150 cuts where I just had to keep cutting stuff and trimming it to just to make it flow and sound good. So fantastic episode, but it was a lot of work to make it ready for air, so to speak.
And definitely, and also like in the episode, you cover a bit on like basically comedy in Vietnam at the time. But in particular, what was it like for Du being like one of the very few, you know, female comics, especially female Vietnamese comics on the scene? And I think because on our panel we have also a female Vietnamese comic, An Pham. So we just we're gonna move into her side of the story. So you moved to Saigon in 2018, right? And so how did you get into stand-up comedy in the first place?
Well, the idea that stand-up comedy is a thing that I could do, like, first occurred to me like 10 years ago when I was with my first boyfriend. I don't remember what prompted it, but I remember bringing it up to my boyfriend at the time, and I was just like, oh, I think it might be fun to try and do stand-up comedy. Because I think around the time I realized, like, open mics were a thing, and people weren't, like, comics could go and try it. And he immediately shut that down. Because this was 10 years ago. I was a very different person back then. I was much more shy and timid and scared. Like, my social anxiety was so much worse. And my boyfriend just shut it down, and he, like, just told me about a friend of his who's so much more outgoing than me, and he's gregarious. And when he went and tried to do an open mic, he got really bad stage fright. So he's basically telling me, it's just like, you? Like, do stand-up comedy? Nah. So I just kind of filed that idea away completely. And then after I moved here, and I was like browsing events on Facebook, I saw that there's an open mic at Indica. And then I remembered again that I was interested in trying stand-up comedy, but I was still not very confident to do it. Like, I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself that it was something I could do. And then I met J.K. Hobson, and then he told me that he hosted open mics at Indica sometimes, and he encouraged me to come to a show. So about a year after I moved here, I went to my first open mic, and I watched the comics perform, and I was like, I think I could do that. And then JK was the person who just kind of gave me that final push I needed, and he encouraged me to go and try and do it. So a week later, like over the next week, I wrote a bunch of jokes, and then I went and performed the week after I went to my first open mic. And like, I was a total noob. I didn't know about the rules and stuff. So I went, like, I didn't know about the 5-minute rule. And I just went up on stage to a full bar, and I performed for 12 minutes. And I have a video of it still. When I look back now at it, I just find it very cringe now, because I've come a long way since my first set. And like, it was just my first time doing it, but I'm really proud of myself for having like pushed myself that way and do something that like in theory should have been terrifying for someone with social anxiety like me. But like, the thing that I found surprising was once I went up on stage, it really wasn't that scary. And I just kind of got into the zone. Like, even for my first performance, like, it kind of felt natural and just right. I didn't feel like an imposter being up there. I was just trying something new. And I knew that, like, I had stuff to say. And it was pretty well received as well. Like, it was a full bar and people laughed at the jokes. And, like, they were really supportive. And I was just like, okay, like, I think I could do this.
Sounds great. And one of your moments of triumph was winning the Saigon Heat of the 2021 Vietnam Comedy Competition. So
yeah.
what was it like doing that?
For me it was just like a really fun new experience and milestone for me. Because when I signed up, actually, like, I'm just going through this phase right now, like, this whole self-improvement development phase and, like, trying to push myself to get out of my comfort zone more and, like, try out new things and not be afraid of failing. So when I signed up originally, I did not think at all that I would even make it to the top three. Like, I signed up, like, really believing that, like, I was not going to do well. I just wanted to just challenge myself and do something that I would think is scary. So when I signed up, I told all my friends even, I was like, oh yeah, I'm definitely not going to win, but like, I just want to try something new and really push myself. And then I went to the competition and I did it. And I was still in that same mindset. I was just like, okay, I tried my best and, you know, I got the thing done and I'm proud of myself for that. And then I got announced as the winner of the competition that night. And I'm in a way, I'm still kind of processing it because I truly did not believe that I would even make it in the top three. So that kind of, that definitely T-boned me.
It definitely is. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, congratulate, but fair game, for stepping up and, you know, eventually doing well. And, you know, we hope, you have much success in the upcoming final, one.
Thank you.
Whenever that is. But yeah, so pick up on that. Obviously you're one of the very few, active female comics, especially Vietnamese female comics, on the scene. So what do you think are some of the stereotypes, some of the barriers that female comics face in the scene in particular?
Well, I don't know what the general, what the barriers in general are for females in stand-up comedy, because I've only ever performed in Saigon. Like, I've never even been to Hanoi. I've never performed in any other countries. I only started once I moved here. And I don't know if my barriers are different as a Vietnamese female comic, because, like, I'm also Viet Kieu, and I'm Western, and, like, I speak English really well. I do, like, Western kind of style of jokes. So I'm the only Vietnamese, like, female Viet Kieu that I know, like, let alone in comedy. So I feel like I have a very unique perspective to bring to this stage, like, because I'm not quite Vietnamese, I'm not quite Canadian, and I have a certain perspective to bring based on that. But just if thinking just in terms of as a female comic, I don't feel like I face any particular barriers that are like specifically because I'm a woman and not just because like I'm me. Because people perceive me a certain way, I think. And I think that because I'm, like, a very small Asian girl who looks like she's, like, fresh out of high school, people don't take me seriously. And I think the general stereotype that, like, women aren't as funny as men, or just, like, women in general just aren't perceived as being funny by default. I don't know how much that actually affects my comedy, but I do get the sense that that does also apply to me, that like people look at me and they just assume that I'm not going to be funny. So I feel like as a woman, I kind of have to try a little bit harder to sort of prove that I'm funny. Like, I feel like I have to try harder. Like, I feel like I have to make sure like the jokes that I write are really polished and really strong and punchy and funny, just to get over like that assumption that, oh, I'm just another like pretty Asian girl.
Yeah.
I think, and I could be completely wrong, so I never like to try and talk definitively, but I think here, because there is a distinct lack of female comics, that the scene is crying out for them. So I don't think there are many barriers. Like, for my shows, I will always, always try and make sure I have at least one female on. Always. It's the thing I focus on the most. You can go look back and through every one of my shows. I don't think you'll find one where it's four guys. Maybe I think one time, and I didn't realize till afterwards, and I was like, ah, damn it, I booked all guys. So I think, and Anne can correct me, but I mean, for me as someone who's putting on shows, I'm always excited when there's a new female comic. But I want to add, that doesn't mean that they still have to be funny, they still have to be good at what they do. So I don't think the standard is lowered, But I think if someone comes in where they are good and they are funny, there's no barriers. They're going to get booked for like every show possible, which.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I wouldn't want to be invited onto a show just because they're trying to like get their token female, you know? I want to know that it's because like they want me definitely. And, as a comic on also, the show.
Yeah, so from what Neil said, it's more of a demand and supply issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so I'd known that Anne had done comedy and I've spoke to Anne about this, but I'd only seen her like once and, you know, it was a long time ago and to be honest, and as I said, I've spoke to Anne about it, I'd never really even thought about putting her on a show because she didn't really perform that often. I hadn't seen her very often. And, but then at the comedy competition, she just blew everyone away, even herself, it seems. She was just absolutely hilarious. I mean, even at the half on the break, everyone I spoke to was like, oh, Anne's won. Like, Anne's won it already. Before the second half of comedians had even come out, they were like, yeah, Anne's won. And so she was fantastic. So immediately, do you know what? I didn't even open up a spot for you. Just fortunately, I had a spot open on the Bubble show that I hadn't filled yet. And I looked on my list and I was like, oh, amazing. I've got a spot open, which was just the next week, just coincidentally. And so obviously, as soon as I saw that, I messaged Anne and I was like, can you come on? Because she was obviously amazing and she was good. And so, I didn't know you. I don't remember you being drunk. I just remember you killing it. You were really, really funny. But I was also drinking the same double IPAs as well. So I probably didn't notice how drunk you were either.
Yeah.
Yeah. The
big lesson I learned from getting a free drink token is never to use them immediately. Yeah, just
I always ask to be on early. I prefer being on early, get my set done, and then I can go drink. If I'm on late in a lineup, I'm like, fuck, I have to sit here and like sip my one beer and take my time and wait to do my set. And then as soon as I'm off stage, I'm like, I have to drink 3 beers to catch up because I've been sitting there all night sober. So it's one of the reasons why I generally ask to be on early in the bill.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, so the takeaway is that we do need more female comics on the scene. And, so there's great demand for that. And so, just one last question. Like, how do we get more females into comedy, in Saigon? And Jack, you can have a say on this.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Well, I feel like it's more like a societal thing. Is that a word? Yeah, it is a word. Okay. But anyway, I feel like girls would look in and like, you know, a lot of girls are funny. The funniest people I know are either women or queer people. But they generally like see that like, you know, this is more like a thing that men do because obviously there's a lot of men, including myself, you know, in stand-up comedy. So like, I'm still trying to figure out how we could like appeal to more women because obviously they have very unique perspectives that, you know, that need to be displayed and, you know, we need to hear them because yeah, that's why we have a diversity hire at all. Like, I guess that's why like people are looking to have people from different cultures and religions and orientations and, you know, like genders all over because everyone has their own point of view and that's how you like, you know, you appeal to as many people as you possibly can. But, as for how to get more girls into comedy, I guess like we need more people like Anne, we need more people like Boomin too. Because they're the ones who's showing the girls like, hey, we could do it and we're fucking good at it. I think.
Very strong position.
I think in Saigon, again, it's completely different to the rest of the world where Saigon, especially in the expat scene, it's such a melting pot. There's people of all different creeds, colors, nationalities, then with, you know, locals as well. I don't think there's I don't think there's like a big boys club here. I don't see that anyway. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Anne would tell me differently. So I'm open to be challenged on that. But I see Saigon seen as really a big melting pot, open. Everyone can get involved. I think for everyone, myself included, the barriers in Saigon are much lower than probably any other city in the world. You know, I hear stories of if you want to do an open mic night in somewhere in the States, you have to line up for an hour outside just to get a 5-minute spot. Heard stories of clubs in South Africa where if you want to get a spot at an open mic night, you have to go out and you have to bring in like 20 people with flyering. Like, you know, it's completely different to here in Saigon because the scene is so new. People like myself can go and do an open mic night and then start to move up to shows and even running their own shows. Like, I'm completely aware that if I was in my home city of Glasgow or most other major cities in the world, I wouldn't be putting on my shows because there would be 5 or 10 other people doing it. So there would be no opportunity. So I think for comedians and everything, anyone who wants to get involved can get involved. Comedy is just a hard thing to get into for all of us, right? For getting started. So any female comedians listening, just do it. Any male comedians, any comedians, yeah, just do it. Just get involved. Like it's rewarding and you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, Anne, do you have any take on this before we move on?
Yeah, I agree with Neil. Like, the scene is so new here, and it's just, like, it's not saturated at all like the other cities that you mentioned. And so, I don't think the barriers are any greater for women than they are for men here. It's just, like, everyone is encouraged to go and try stand-up comedy. Like, we want more comics. We want to see more different voices, and especially in a city like Saigon with like such a big expat scene and people coming from all different parts of the world. Like there's just so much opportunity to have like a variety of comics, which so far, even like with the scene as small as it is, like I really like that it's such a melting pot of like different voices.
So that's the thing. Like, we just need more people to get involved and also more people to come to shows. And from there, the scene can prosper. And definitely, Neil, you're doing good things by producing all these shows and giving people stage time. And that's the foundation we need. You know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Definitely. So, so that's been a very insightful discussion. So we're just going to have, move on to the final portion of this recording. We're going to have a bit of a quick discussion, quick panel discussion on different things. So a bit of a quick fire chat. So our first one is, podcast ideas that can only work in Vietnam. We're going to start with, Jack, and then, you know, and everyone can join in.
I've never been to a different country, so I wouldn't really know. I don't know if other countries have, like podcasts that like, say something about the traffic, because there's this one podcast, like, this radio station that they're always talking about some accident that's happening somewhere in the city. And it's just like, you know, somewhere like in Sweden, could you really have that sort of like dramatic podcast in Sweden where they have like close to 0 accidents per year? Like, I'm guessing like, you know, in that podcast in Sweden, they're just going to be talking about what donut they're having today. Like, so yeah, the traffic's looking real good today and I'm having like a lemon poppy seed donut. Or what about you? And it's just the same every day. The only thing different is the donut flavors.
Yeah, I mean, or it was just like a bicycle hitting the Abba Museum. You know, it's just that would be one that would consider a traffic accident in Sweden. What about you guys? What do you think?
I would love an instructional podcast on how to operate an elevator or a lift. Because, you know, I understand, but in Vietnam, you know, when you want the lift, when you want to go up in the lift, but the lift is up, people press the down button. which I understand because they want the lift to come down to them. But that's telling the lift that you want to go down. And so the amount of times I've gotten a lift and then gone down before I go up, or yeah, just I've had various lift experiences that have never happened to me anywhere else in the world.
There's a very
specific experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an episode idea for 7 million bikes, you know. 7 million elevators. And what about you? And do you have any ideas?
I would like a podcast that's about like funny stories that people have, like different expats have about like things that were lost in translation. Because like Vietnamese people have to interact with people from all walks of life, and like sometimes you have people from non-English speaking countries. So like we got two people who don't speak the same language, like they have one language in common, but neither of them are good at it. So I can only imagine like the things that like resulted from those sort of like miscommunications and misunderstandings.
So can I tell you my example of this? This is one of my favorite stories. We had not long been in Vietnam, and we went out for some food. This was in District 1. We got some big bowl of rice and some tofu at this favorite, one of our favorite restaurants, just in Wing Cu Chin area. And, but we weren't that hungry, so we'd barely eaten it. There was so much food left, but it was our favorite, one of our favorite things to eat was this fried rice and this tofu. And so we wanted to take it home. So we looked up on, Google Translate. We put in takeaway, because in the UK, you know, we say takeaway. Mm. You know, we're going to get a takeaway tonight. Can we take, we want this food takeaway. Now in America, they would say, or Canada probably, they'd say to go, right? But in the UK, we say takeaway. So I put in Google Translate takeaway, which translated as lead, lad, I've forgotten now. What's takeaway? Lead, lady. Thank you. My wife is shouting to me in the background here. Lady. Lady. We said to the staff, we said, oh, you know, lady, and they kind of looked at it as funny. And they took her food away. And so we were waiting for it, waiting for it, waiting for it. 5 minutes went by, 10 minutes went by. And my wife is like, I don't think they're bringing the food back. I was like, no. They're just trying to find a container to put it in. They'll bring it back. We said, you know, we want it to go. Another 5 minutes went by. No food came back. My wife's like, I don't think they're bringing it back. I think they've thrown it away. I was like, no. And then kind of try and talk to the staff through Google Translate or whatnot. And then it kind of dawned on us. We were like, this is why they were looking at us strangely. We weren't asking for the food to go, which now we know is Mangdi. We were literally pointing at the food and saying, take it away. Take it away.
That's great. That's
get that out of my face.
So sure enough, they took the food away and probably just threw it away.
Fuck it.
And we were so gutted because it was this big bowl of rice and this big bowl of tofu that we were like really looking forward to taking home and eating later. So that's my example. We'd only been here a few weeks. That was my example of a lost in translation.
Definitely. That's going to be the first episode, right? Yeah. Yeah, some really fun ideas there. One about traffic accident, instruction to use the lift, 7 million lifts,
yeah,
and lost in translation. Right. So and so we can have a second one. Famous female figures, past and present, you would invite on your podcast. Jack, who would you invite?
I think I should invite Lady Diana. Lady D. Yeah. So remember how riveting that conversation between Oprah and like Meghan Markle and Prince Ray? And I just want a segment where it's like, surprise bitches, Lady D came back from the dead and she's gonna expose all of you hoes. She's gonna tell on all of you bitches that did wrong on her. Just watch. And Lady D would be like over here sending like, you know,
And this first one goes out to this bitch Elizabeth that had a lot to say about me in the press. What's good, Elizabeth?
I think that would go down well in Ireland since they're so anti-monarchy. Lady Di, what about you, Neil? Who would you invite on 7 million bites?
Give me one more minute. Anne, what do you think?
Oh God.
I know, right?
A woman? Can you narrow it down a bit? Women are half the population.
Well, famous, you're like, just, you know, historic. So maybe someone from Canada, perhaps, or, you know.
Helen Keller?
She wasn't real.
She was real. Helen Keller was real.
No, she's real. Just feminist propaganda.
Betty Crocker?
Aunt Jemima?
Oh, my God.
I would invite Aunt Jemima. Aunt Jemima. I would invite her just so I can tell her, like, how she made my fucking childhood as a broke Canadian growing up because I couldn't have real maple syrup. And she made pancake breakfast so much better. Mm. And she's forever cemented in my core memories.
Yep, so Aunt Jemima, yeah, definitely the syrup. what about you, Neil?
Well, so can I just add, Helen Keller is a real person. Maybe we learned about her in school. She was like she was like deaf and couldn't speak. She was, I already looked it up, she was a disability rights activist from Alabama and lost her sight and hearing at the age of 19 months. So it wasn't a very funny joke, because she wouldn't be a very good interviewer if she can't hear you or see you, but anyway.
Oh, she's American? I thought she was like Jewish or something.
You
can be both.
You're thinking
No, that's Anne Frank.
Yeah, you're thinking of Anne Frank.
I mix them all together.
I'll interview Anne Frank then. That'll be mine.
Anne Frank, yeah. Yeah, talking about...
What's it like playing a long game of hide and seek? Really long.
Yeah, really long. Yeah, but she lost in the end, but, you know.
Yes, I was gonna say. She didn't win.
Oh no.
No, we just to clarify, we do support strong fear.
Imagine telling her, imagine informing Anne Frank that like millions of people have read her personal diary.
That's really fucked up. That's messed up.
She would die. She would just be like, okay, let the Nazis take me now, please.
Oh my goodness,
I've never thought of that.
Yeah. Oh, they found out all my high school crush.
Can I die now? That's like good news.
That's it. I'm flying business class to hell.
I mean, we say some dumb shit on this podcast before, so, you know, you... Hey, welcome to the club. So, yeah.
Dumb shit like Helen Keller.
I think with Helen Keller, you should do a video podcast.
Sorry.
Just to clarify.
Seven million Helen Kellers?
Yeah. It's a video podcast, lots of sign language. It's the first sign language podcast.
7 million sounds that she'll never hear.
Imagine doing a podcast in sign language.
Yeah, just
in, no video, just audio, sign language and audio only.
Everyone's like, wow, this is riveting.
She could be a TikTok star. Oh. She can be on TikTok with the captions or like written like all ghetto shit.
Do you guys remember when the guy did the sign language for, was it Nelson Mandela's funeral?
Yeah.
And he didn't know sign language and he was just like, he was like rapping the whole time and the people who were actually deaf were watching it being like, what is he doing? It's not sign language at all. And he'd somehow blagged his way on stage and was doing like, he just kept going like,
I want that job.
Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah. It's like, Just like you're doing the Macarena.
I was a kid.
Yeah, Jack, you're too young. You wouldn't remember that.
Yeah, I remember that he died, but I didn't. I was too young.
He did.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, he did.
I'll send it to you later, Jack. The sign language guy at Nelson Mandela's funeral. It was hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Sounds funny.
Right. So far we have, Lady Di, Aunt Jemima, Helen Keller,
Anne Frank.
And that went downhill from there very quickly.
Uphill.
We're punching up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're gonna have the final one, which is things Vietnamese people do when they're listening to podcasts.
Pick the nose.
Yep, pick the nose. Jack, what do you do, being a...
Well, filming, during the filming of this podcast, which counts as listening to a podcast, cause I'm listening to you. I was playing Minesweeper.
Jack, I was going to ask, what are you doing? Because the whole time I could just see you doing this. And I was like, why is Jack like bopping away the whole time? What is he doing? You could see Nia and Anne and the same as me just sitting here listening. And Jack just like this.
It doesn't matter.
I can't see anyone.
It doesn't matter if I'm playing anything or not. I'm just moving because I have this like rotating chair, and I'm not afraid.
Yeah, the rotating chair. That's one thing people would do. Yeah.
There you go.
And it's a habit that I have when I sit. It's like, you know, I don't know. I jiggle my thigh. I don't know any one of you do it, but I do it a lot. It's like it looks like I'm moving, but. So even though I'm like fully focused on you guys right now, I'm not playing anything right now. Like, I'm still moving.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And what do you think Vietnamese people do when they're listening to podcasts?
Vietnamese people don't listen to podcasts.
That is kind of true.
They do sometimes.
Yeah. Small amount.
Small amount, but...
Small amount, yeah. It's true.
I don't know, am I supposed to say something like stereotype, like squatting on a tile floor swinging a fish? Vietnamese people do all kinds of shit.
It's true.
They'll literally do anything, anywhere, anytime. Doesn't matter. So anything you've ever seen a Vietnamese person do, they're doing that while they're
in the same. It's true. Yeah.
I saw this lady who was like wiping the plaque off of or tartar or whatever off of her son's mouth, like in a supermarket. She's like, let me just, yeah, right there. No. And she really got in.
And the son was 25. That was what was crazy about it.
Well, when you're riding on a cell home, right? And they always have earbuds on, and you always wonder what are they listening to, you know?
Probably the wife screaming at them. Yeah.
Wife screaming direction, so that's good. But hopefully next time they will be listening to either this podcast or 7 Million Bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... So far we have Jack is, playing Minesweeper and rocking the chair. Yes. Neil is picking the noses. And Anne is just squatting.
Squatting, eating bunny, like cursing. Now you made it sound Russian. So squatting and cursing.
Neil, before we go, what are some of the big plans you have for the podcast and comedy in general?
Just more bigger, better, stronger, faster, you know. We want to reach as many people as we can. We got our first sponsor this season, so that's pretty cool to now have some backing. I'm not going to be giving up my day job anytime soon, but it's nice to have some support with the shows. There's a lot of comedy on in Saigon right now, so I'm not looking to do any more shows, but right now, like we just talked at the beginning of the episode, we're essentially in a lockdown of sorts, you know, not like a full lockdown. So there's been no shows this month. I doubt there's going to be any in June. This whole year has been difficult. So once things go back to normal, it's then just trying to bring people out, which is difficult. People get scared, you know, and people don't want to be out, be amongst people. You obviously know that being in Ireland, you're probably about to go through that, that people are going to slowly come out. I doubt that as soon as the lockdown ends, everyone's going to suddenly be like,
yeah,
let's all, yeah, it's gonna be let's gradual, all be in a yeah, small room right. together. And the difficult thing with comedy is to have a good comedy show, you need everyone tight together, sitting next to each other. You can't really have a socially distanced comedy show, you know?
Yeah.
So I think this year, even at the beginning of this year, for me, it was just getting through the year, to be honest. Like, let's just do the best we can. It's going to be a difficult year. Mm. It's really difficult to set goals or targets or like, you know, even 10 days ago, we thought we'd kind of, I don't know about you, Jack and Anne, but it felt like we kind of gotten through this wave already. I think it was the Prime Minister or someone said, oh, you know, we've got this contained because they'd done such an amazing job. And then all of a sudden a case sprung up in Ho Chi Minh City. And then from one case, it's grown and grown. And so we're not looking at crazy numbers like other places in the world, but Vietnam's tolerance for COVID is so small. So even a few cases, they act quickly, which is good because then it goes back to normal faster. But I think this is, they say, the fourth wave, but I've heard people say this is really the first wave that Vietnam's faced because the other three were so small. Mm-hmm. This is the biggest by far. And so I think it's going to be challenging for a while. So for me, comedy is really on the back burner right now because it just can't happen. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's going to happen until at least July. Mm-hmm. So I'm just really focusing on podcasts, making episodes right now while we can't do events, making good episodes. And just trying to survive, really.
That's good, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which you will know all about over the last year.
Mm. Yeah, just survive. But yeah, that's great. Sounds like a very ambitious plan. But anyway, so thank you so much. First of all, thank you to Neil for joining us. And hopefully we can see more. We can hear more of the 7 Million Bytes podcast. So where can we find this podcast?
Everywhere, so you can get it on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts. You probably know as well, there's about 30 different platforms that provide podcasts. I've not heard of like 27 of them, but wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find them. Mm. You can also go on the 7 Million Bytes website, which is just new this year, 7millionbytes.com, and you'll find out information about the shows, about the podcast, and we're actually just about to launch a blog as well this week, so that's pretty exciting as well. Yeah, I'm excited to do something new that with in that sense as well, so check it out, 7millionbikes.com, everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff.
Fantastic, and also thank you to our panelists, Ang Pham and Jack Nguyen, for breaking their podcast virginity. You know, a great debut from you guys. So we're hoping to have you on more for more for future episodes. Thank you so much for everyone for joining in, and also remember to follow us on social media and subscribe to our YouTube. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.